Welcome back to Loop and Cue. I'm your host, David Feenberg. Today with me is our master tempeh maker here inside the Loop & Co., Tim Berikichvili. He's an accomplished chef, worked around the world, and is an absolute asset to this business. And it's a little bit of an impromptu podcast, mainly because, well, two reasons. No one knows about Lupin, and not too many people know about Lupin tempeh. So I thought it was a great opportunity to put it on our little podcast and get it out there, and then perhaps some people that want to know about tempeh and a little bit about Lupin, I hope that it puts a little bit of brightness into their day. So welcome, Tim.
Hello, David. How are you?
Awesome to have you here, Tim. I've always called you Tempeh Tim because you are the tempeh maker. How long have you been making tempeh for, Tim?
About 10 years.
10 years, my goodness. So just let's talk about tempeh. So you've got strong, I mean, you're Italian and you're a chef, been in Australia for many years, but when did you first start making tempeh and how does it all work?
Well, I started when I was living down south in Margaret River. I learned from an older tempeh master called Amita, who traveled Indonesia for 25 years and learned from many tempeh masters. And he shared with me his knowledge. And yeah, I kept going and I did tempeh ever since.
So tempeh, as I understand it, goes back thousands of years, doesn't it? How far back does, you know, when did tempeh really start? And well, what is tempeh? It's a fermenting process, right?
Yeah, tempeh is a fermented food and originally is made out of soybeans. So it came out of a mistake, I think, out of some merchant from China who had some soybean back in down the boat. And yeah, there were some fungi going on. And eventually they found out that it came out like a hard cake and they probably tested it and it was good.
So if people think about fermentation and the process that tempeh goes through, would you say that cheese is probably the closest thing to most people know about fermentation?
Yeah, probably cheese is the closest one, although there are so many different kind of fermentation. And
what was it that got you connected to Lupin? You were down in Margaret River and you found a tempeh maker, and you being a chef, you were looking for something different to cook with?
Well, mainly because being a chef, it's a very frustrating environment. And I love food and I thought to keep working with food, but in a different scenario. So I didn't know about Lupin back then. I just knew about soy and tofu and all of that. But apparently soy in Australia is not as famous. And so it came out that this beautiful product was made with lupin, which is another amazing bean, and it worked the same, if not better, and with more protein for sure. So then, yeah, I just used it.
And we'll talk about the texture and the taste and the smell and all the rest of it a little bit later on. But for the benefit of fellow lupineers out there, Tim works inside the Lupin Co. And we've been friends for probably 7 or 8 years. I first met Tim when he was the master tempeh maker and the owner of the Margaret River Tempeh. Yeah, that was the name of the company. And that was back a few years ago, Tim.
Yeah, I think it was 6 years ago.
6 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. And my first meeting with Tim was, it was in our little office in Fremantle, and in came Tim with this block of stuff that I'd actually never seen before. So we put it on the table and got a big knife out and cut through it, and it was just like the texture of cheddar cheese.
Yeah, that's right. Much healthier though.
Much healthier, yeah, yeah. So if someone was listening to this podcast, let's describe it for them. What does a block of tempeh look like?
Well, depending by the what kind of bean you use, let's say you use lupins, which are yellow color. So then you have lupin beans that are surrounded by white mold called mycelium that during the fermentation process, it grows around the beans and takes the protein out of it and enhances the vitamin B12 as well. So then you have this beautiful white cake, and the white part looks exactly like the brie cheese on the outside part. So then you have this cake with the white mold on the outside, many lupin beans inside that are all bound together by this mycelium, and you can cut it and it's solid. You can then Just fry it, soak it, cook it, boil it, steam it, and it behaves perfectly, and it just soaks any flavor you add to it.
So soaking, and one of the products that we've been making, and that is the marinated tempeh for our Margaret River customers. So it absorbs flavor really well?
Yes, it absorbs everything you put in it, probably 80% of whichever flavor. And then, you can fry it and cook it in a way that will enchant it even more. But yeah, these are all Australian versions because the Indonesian people just don't add anything and it's just a fry basic tempeh.
And we'll talk about the process for making the tempeh shortly, but I remember a good few years ago we ran some technical trials on it, and I'm pretty sure it came up at around about 21% protein, 22% protein?
Yeah, roughly 22, 23. It depends by the batch.
Yeah, quite amazing. Let's talk about how the devil do you make tempeh. So we start off with, say, in the little Lupin Co. here, we start off with some lupin splits, and well, let's take our fellow lupineers through the process, Tim. So how do we do it?
So the short version is you take the splits and you soak them overnight with some vinegar to drop the pH level. And then the next day, whatever amount you put, it will double because the beans soak water and they roughly double in size and weight. And then you wash them very well, and then you boil them for about 2 or 3 hours up to the point that you can eat it sort of al dente. Once that's done, you drain the water and you spin them so that they are not dry. And then you cool them down roughly at 30 degrees temperature, where it's a lovely environment for the fungi to grow. So once that's done, you just mix the beans with the fungi, you inoculate them, and then you put them to sleep in a plastic bag, or traditionally in Indonesia, they put them in banana leaves or in any sterile environment where, it can grow for the next 35 hours.
And during that growth period, I've noticed that it becomes really quite warm. Is that the conventional way of fermentation? Does it always develop temperature?
Yeah, because you can think about like if it's the fungi is reproducing itself, so it generates heat. So then you gotta control it with ventilation or cooling systems. Otherwise, if it reaches a certain temperature and stays on it for longer time, it will die, and then the tempeh will not happen, and you would rather have very smelly, stinky beans.
So after about 30 odd hours, we've got this beautiful, firm cheddar cheese type cake, if you like, in these big forming trays. And what happens after that?
Well, after that, once you made sure that it's ready by poking holes in it and filling it, touching it, and controlling temperature inside, you gotta put it out of the fermenter room and drop the temperature down. Otherwise, the tempeh, by being a living culture, it will keep working. So you gotta drop the temperature with cooling systems up to 5 degrees and let it stay and rest until the moment you're sure that it's totally cold. And then you can finally cut it. And well, if it's a small batch, I guess cut it and eating, or you can pack it and store it in freezers, most likely, or in a other kind of packaging.
Very interesting. And I guess that's the time when you'd cut it to form it into, if you're going to dice it or if you're going to sliver it for burgers and all the rest, that's the time to do it. It's not to wait until it's rock hard coming out of the freezer.
Yeah, that's right, because otherwise you will have a already frozen product, and by being a chef, I can suggest to don't do that. If not, you will lose the properties of the product.
Yep. Many of our listeners will have been to Bali for holidays or Indonesia through there, and I've seen this product through Indonesia called kripik, like a kripik chip. They're almost addictive. So that comes out of tempeh as well, yeah?
Yeah, kripik comes out of tempeh. It's a little bit of a different process, but yeah, generally speaking, is a fried tempeh chips, which then obviously because it's fried and everything fried is tasty, then yeah, it's so popular.
And in Australia, for example, what would be some of the typical dishes that would be ideal for tempeh as either cubed or what would be a sort of a fairly classical Australian two or three dishes that you could do?
You can do many, but the most popular ones are tempeh chips, fried wedges with just aioli sauce, if you like, or you can soak some sort of tempeh strips or cubes and put it in a salad. Or as I used to do when I was managing a Mexican restaurant, I would put them inside tacos with ranchero sauces, and yeah, it would have the same mouthfeel as if you were eating meat. So yeah, it's a good replicant.
So this morning when we arrived at the factory here, it was 11. We're in the middle of, we're at the start of winter. So it was 11 degrees Celsius for those that are in Celsius. So I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but it was cold. So for doing a really nice warm winter dish, how would it go in things like a casserole or a stew or something like that? How would it go?
Oh, it would be amazing. As long as the ingredients are right, you put some...
How would you do it, Tim? So you're in your kitchen and you've got this tempeh and you've got the cube. So what are we going to do? We're going to saute some onions to start off with? What would a typical recipe? You've been a chef for many years. You're in the Swiss Alps about this time last year, you lucky duck. So let's take our listeners through just a really simple, easy recipe that you might be able to make out of tempeh.
Well, let's say you can do a curry. So you would just chop basic onion, carrots, and then garlic, some chili for the most adventurous. Then you would add some tempeh to start to roast a little bit. Then once that's done, you add some coconut milk or cream and let it go. And then you add your spices, turmeric, cumin, coriander, and so on. And then you just let it cook for 1 or 2 hours. Just add more water and let it dry again, up to the moment where it's a creamy stew. And you can add some rice if you like, because the tempeh is the protein part. Then you want your carbs or bread or, yeah.
Yeah, sounds amazing. I guess the future for consumers is really about having a flexible diet. It's not just about having a plant diet. I mean, we've got red meat and fish and chicken and all the rest of it, and pork, of course. But this just makes a really nice alternative, and it's fairly quick and easy to use.
Yeah, tempeh is very flexible and easy, and it's amazing because you can think about, like, you can replicate most of the meat dishes with it. And for example, I'm Italian and I love bolognese sauce, so if you do the same process you would do for a bolognese sauce, but you just mince the tempeh rather than the meat, and the same cooking time and everything, it will come the same, will have the same mouthfeel, the same flavor if you add the right salt. But it's a fermented food, so that will have also the extra benefit of the fermentation, which you can think about like if it's a pre-digested food, which really helps your gut to going on in your day.
That's the thing about fermented foods, isn't it, Tim? It's already been through that first stage of really starting to slice up all the proteins to make it more digestible. I guess kombucha is probably the one that comes to mind as being a sort of a semi-fermented type of drink, but there's a million others, but it's a really healthy food, isn't it?
Yeah, as long as you see fermented food, you're safe to eat it. Yeah, kombucha is a safe drink, not alcoholic, but also for the most passionate, beer as well is fermented. So to a degree, it's healthy. Of course, you don't have to exaggerate, but...
No, exactly. Over the years, I've seen you make so much tempeh, and you talk about it at having a, you know, it's living, breathing, it's your little boys, and it's alive, and I guess it can come back to life. I mean, let's just talk about shelf life. So during the process, it creates this beautiful white mycelium around the outside of it, and then we cool it down, and then you cut it, and then it gets frozen, and then it gets, you know, put into the packaging and all the rest of it. But what about shelf life when it is defrosted? How does that all work?
Well, shelf life, it depends by the temperature, but I tested it to the extreme. But let's say you can go easily 1 week into the fridge, and you can understand when it start to be bad tempe, when it's over-sporulating, and you can see black dots into around the white mycelium. If your fridge is around 2 degrees, it's fairly difficult to get there in 2 or 3 days, like with meat. So yeah, it's safe food. The Indonesian people, they just treat it like super carelessly, and it never goes bad. I know some producer that they just inoculate the beans and then they just leave it there in a colder area, and then they sell it to the customer without being fermented yet, and then the customer will ferment it in its own depot. And so you can play with the fermentation. You can inoculate it and freeze it, and 1 year later put it out and will ferment after that. So it's a living product. It's amazing.
Yeah, so quite incredible. So even doing it in a curry or whatever, I mean, it's cooked and of course in it, and then if it's frozen as the meal for next Wednesday night after you've had a hard day at work and you just want to be able to pull a meal out of the fridge, you pretty much treat it exactly the same as any other meal.
Exactly the same, yeah.
Yeah. The thing that we were talking about going back some time ago, and that was the when we started this conversation, was about the origins of tempeh. And I remember seeing in Indonesia that, and you talked about the beans being ready to inoculate, and so I've seen them wrapped up in banana leaf.
Yeah, the tempeh wrapped up in banana leaves is the traditional tempeh, and it just gives a extra layer of flavor, if you like, because I guess back then they didn't have plastic. Plus, it really changes the flavor and also the fermentation time. You don't have to poke holes in the bags because the leaf breathes naturally, while the plastic, if you don't poke it, the tempeh will suffer and die. But yeah, in the Western countries is a bit of a tricky thing because for sanitary reasons, they will not allow you to do that.
Tim, it's been great to chat, and thanks very much for jumping into the breach at very short notice to talk about one of your passions that's very close to your heart, making tempeh. There's no doubt at all that with the need for plant proteins, but also a genuinely sustainable set of options, that we'll be able to see more and more tempeh in the stores over the coming years.
Yeah, let's hope so. And thank you for the chat, David.
So there we go, fellow Lupineers. It's been really great talking with Tim today. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you again soon. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to stay in the loop and subscribe to Lupin Q on your favourite podcast platform, and leave us a review and let us know what you think. Your feedback helps us improve and reach more listeners like you. Don't forget to visit thelupinco.com.au for more resources, recipes and the latest updates on all things Lupin. Follow us on social media to stay connected and join the conversation. Until next time, I'm David Feenberg, and this has been Lupin Q. Take care.